Artist Wayne Yule of Ngāpuhi, Ngāti Whakaeke, and as he says, Ngāti Pākehā descent, has long addressed bicultural friction in his work, identity, race, cultural commodification, in a funny and subversive way. Yule has a major solo exhibition opening at Pātaka Art Museum in his place of birth, Porirua, in a week, his hometown, Te Tahi Bay, more exactly. It's called 2020 Words of Wisdom, and it features Yule's work over the last 20 years, including painting and printmaking and sculpture and installation. He is based in Amberley, Canterbury, but is a resident living in Auckland at the McCann House, the artist's residency there. And he has been in Porirua installing his show. And here he is now. How's it going?
Kia ora, Kim. It's going good. It's going
I was saying, do you want to talk about Gogang? And you said, well, you know, the thing is, you said, we couldn't have that Robert Mapplethorpe exhibition and even that Keith Haring exhibition now because it would be too confronting. Do you think?
I think it'd be a lot harder. I think the time that we saw it, I mean, I'd love to see it. I saw it the first time. I thought it was amazing. I just think that it's just a different time, and I think there'd have to be so much disclaimers and possibly works left out. And
how do you feel about this need for disclaimers and context and explanations and those were different times and we can't endorse that now and, you know, abhorring the artist but not the work or maybe the work as well? How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I think it snuck up on us, but then snuck up on us and slapped us in the face. So it's kind of creeped up and then bang, you know. But I was talking to a friend of mine just recently, a curator friend, and we were talking about those things that you could perhaps not do or wouldn't be as easy to do now that we could have done even 10 years ago. And I thought for the first time in my career, I was doing some artwork that after 20 years, I actually hesitated on the push go button, like, you know, to get it sent away and to get made.
What was it?
It was a silhouette of something that
of what?
No, it was a silhouette. So it's kind of like a backstory. So it was a silhouette of the Little Black Sambo. And I was read, and I've always had a copy. I've had a copy since as long as I could remember.
Yeah, he ran around until he turned into butter.
Round and round. And the drawings were amazing. And I was read it by my grandmother and all of these things. And I had it and I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then for the first time in 20 years, I thought, who am I going to offend? And I was like, oh, my God. I don't know if I was more concerned with, was I going to offend anyone? Or was I concerned for the fact that I'm thinking about offending someone in the game of art or in the game of music or writing.
Like, you're self-censoring.
Yeah, self-censoring. Mm. So then we got talking about Mapplethorpe, the Haring show. I mean, I could be just thinking of, you know, trying to kind of recall those memories, but I think they got in some trouble for the Haring show. Now, whether we could have a Haring show now, it would be very much edited from all the AIDS and the crack stuff and the, you know, homosexuality stuff. And if we did, it would be so full of restrictions and writing and hurdles that, for me, it would take away from the show.
Well, that's what you wonder, isn't it? If you have to surround it all with walls of talk and warning and
security.
Yeah. Ugh. You can't just look at...
Ugh.
I don't know. But maybe Caroline Virko's right, that things like Gauguin or Mapplethorpe or Keith Haring, they provide an entry point for really interesting spring-offs.
100%. And that's some of the best way to start that dialogue. The issue is, though, whether you go into those shows looking for that raru-raru or looking for that drama or the controversy before enjoying the aesthetics or the skill that's in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she also spoke about Kara Walker. Kara Walker is a genius and exquisite work. And that's very, very confronting and very honest, all her silhouette kind of stuff. But, I'm concerned that people go for that, I wonder how many more people will go to the Gauguin show to witness, you know, the ills of painting nude women.
Well, actually, I haven't got many nude women in it, so well, they'll be disappointed.
See?
Warning! Yeah. No nude women.
Spoiler alert.
A number of people have made this point that if Hitler had been a doctor and discovered the cure for cancer, would we refuse to use the treatment? In other words, why do we judge artists in a different way from we might judge scientists who can be equally horrible? It's not the same thing.
No. And I think in life we know, I mean, in our field, I know plenty of people who I really, really adore their work. But they're not people that I'm going to hang out with in the weekend. And vice versa. And the same for me. People are not going to want to hang out with me, or they want to hang out with me but don't like my work. And that's, you just have to accept that. That's fine. We're not going to please everyone all the time.
Do you hang out with people who don't like your work?
I don't know who likes, I don't know.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you.
No, we talked about that social thing. People are only going to tell you behind your face, you know, behind your back, really, socially.
Do they go on social media and say, ooh, that Wang
Yu? Oh, I don't know, Kim. I'm not on social media, so I
run. Aren't you?
No, I mean, I do the whole Instagram thing, but I'm too scared of Facebook, so. Yeah.
Scared?
Well, I feel like you've got to commit to talking.
You don't want
to
get
Facebook.
Caught up in it.
Nah.
No, once you start.
But Instagram's like quick and clean, and you go, boop, here it is. And if you don't like it, don't like it. And if you do like it, like it.
One of the pieces in this exhibition at Pataka is a tiny little photograph of you in blackface.
Yep.
We could talk about that in the context of, you know, acceptability.
Yep.
How come you're allowed to do blackface if it's in a frame hanging on a wall and you're an artist?
See, again, that's really interesting. Would I do myself in blackface now? That work is 13 years old. That work does, when we talked about labels, that work will have a label at the show that is in my writing, which I was hoping, you know, Ruben Patterson, who curated the show, was going to tweak, but then he said it's probably really nice to have in my own writing. So that was really good. Felt comfortable with that because I'm not a writer's backside. And then, so growing up, I was always well aware I was Māori or part Māori. It was never an issue. It just wasn't a thing, and neither should it be a thing. And I'm really intrigued that we based ourselves, you know, we first impressions a lot of time based on aesthetics about those type of things. And through those formidable years when I was at high school, I really, really, really wanted to, with the support of my parents, I really wanted to follow the whole Māori, you know, thing. I wanted to do Māori language, the reo classes at high school. I wanted to do the kapaka. I wanted to do all of those things. But you're at 14 and 13 and 14, you know, those are tough times. And if you're not aesthetically
you mean
Māori,
you were too fair?
Yeah, that's it. You got it.
To be one. Accepted.
Yeah, so, you know, you kind of walk this two lines. So you're kind of too sort of strangely something to be Māori, and then you're too something to be Pākehā. And so it was really strange. And so what I said was, when I did that work in 2006, it's called When I Grow Up, I Want to Be Black. I always thought to myself it would be so easy, so much easier to justify some of the things that I do in my practice, some of the things I'm interested in, some of the ways that I talk to people, some of the ways I now talk to my children, if I was if I was darker. And I thought, what is the most lowbrow signifier of white and black? And so I got myself painted up makeup place in Christchurch. Found the nearest white wall, had a Polaroid, shot one shot, and then put it in a show. And it's one of my favorite works that I've made, because it's interesting that whilst it's 13 years old, we talked about it the other day, that it comes back, and those stories come back, and they'll come back, and they'll happen again, and then some clown will do it again, and then, you know, and it just keeps coming on and showing its, rearing its head. And so when you talked before about the entry point to discussion, that's one amazing thing artwork can do. So we can both go to the Gauguin show with those intentions, and through that aesthetic or through that, we can open that dialogue, and that's what a lot of my work does.
But you intend that photo of you in blackface to open dialogue, do you not? Whereas Gauguin, it was pretty much oblivious. You know, he didn't know.
Can we use the of-the-time argument? I don't know.
No.
I'm just, that's not, a question.
Well, these days we can't.
No.
Because if we use the of-the-time argument, then we still think James Cook was a fabulous guy.
And
with no vices whatsoever. And Gauguin was just a lovely painter, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And that would be it.
But what perhaps we could do is we could say he was a lovely painter. Full stop. End of.
Well, yeah. Except he was pretty dodgy in those
days. If you
days.
Started out by saying he was
but
a lovely man.
But now it's eczema, he had a not syphilis.
Yeah, no eczema.
Goodness me, well, that'll be good news.
But no, I think any dialogue, and if we can go through, and I'm sure it'll be a work that the gallery will have to, you know, tackle some possible challenges, but I wouldn't have left it out. It was always going to be in. It's been planned to be in the show for over a year. And then we had, was it Justin? Some politician did it in Canada, or someone went to, in blackface when he was...
Trudeau. Much
so,
to everybody's surprise. The follies of his youth.
Yeah.
Not once, but twice, and possibly even three times.
Yeah, third time, you're not too smart.
But, you know, it's not Prince Andrew, is it?
Sketchy, huh? He is super sketchy.
Why are skulls one of your motifs?
They were for a long, long, long time. I am obsessed with them in terms of a boyhood thing. They have that kind of boyhood danger slash...
You've got lots of tattoos. Have you got any skulls?
I do, yeah. I have a few skulls, daggers and bits and pieces, but I always have thought of them as a vessel. So when we X-ray you and you X-ray me, our skulls are clearly different. And what they also do is they tell stories. Mm. So, for example, you know, you lost a tooth from rugby, all of these kind of things. So I've always thought of
them as... I've never played rugby. That's completely wrong.
I have.
I would never have lost a tooth in rugby.
I have. Right. So you know what I mean? And yours would have a bigger brain in it.
Oh, doubt it.
I guarantee it. So, you know, they're an amazing vessel. They're personal. And I just thought that, you know, they have all of that. I haven't used the skull for a long time, but they're not something I run away from. I remember there was a whole thing about, you know, Hearst, and it's that whole association that it's quite rife in the art world.
But you were ahead of Hearst on the skull thing, weren't you?
I don't know. I don't even know how I did skulls when I came out of design school.
Of course.
So I wouldn't have a clue. I didn't know who Damien Hearst was.
What was the first contact with art that you ever had? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. And it was really, really profound. My grandmother, on the Māori side, she took me to a show in Wellington when the City Gallery was over. I can't even remember. I was so little. I think I was 10. And it was, and I know that Lara Strongman's written about it, and I wish I could remember the name, but it was that American, that famous, you know, the person with the shopping trolley looking up, those realistic sculptures, and then there was the overweight guy with the Hawaiian.
Yeah.
That show.
Ah,
best
it'll
show
come
ever.
To me. Yeah.
It will, and someone will tell you.
So they're like real-sized figures.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So it was
yes.
the two extremes. So my grandmother took me there, and I went, wow, you know, and it had that naivety that now we look at Ron Muick and all of those kind of people.
Oh, it wasn't Ron Muick?
No, it's that American one. It's like the 70s, 80s.
Okay.
You will know. Someone will say, and I'm sure Lara would know if she knows. So she told me, and it was when the City Gallery was across the road. There was a thing across near the, where...
How old were you?
I must have been 10.
All right.
So anyway, so I've been about that. And then the other access to art was when we used to go to the Museum on the Hill and see the Māori art, and that just blew my mind. And I remember, you know, seeing Te Huki Tūranga and all the Kō Whaiwhai and all that for the first time, and it was, you know, life-changing for me.
Yeah.
It really was, yeah. It really was.
You're a big sporting person.
Have been.
Rugby, as you said.
Yeah, rugby.
Surfing. Yeah. Did you do that as a form? I mean, this is, who knows? You did it because you liked it, but it was also an identification thing.
100%.
Was it?
100%. Especially the rugby thing, because a lot of my rugby, I played rugby up until I was 40, I think, was my last year I played. And I...
Crikey, well, maybe my brain is better than yours then.
I told you it was.
I don't know. How many concussions have you had?
I've only had a couple. Yeah. Couple broken. Anyway, there was a great relief because my rugby...
Dwayne Hansen.
Yes. Did someone tell you?
Thank
or did you know?
No.
Oh,
I'd like
genius.
To say it came into my
with
very,
my big
very
brain.
Sharp brain. But no, a very good texter has just texted
Amazing.
Dwayne
Thank
Hansen.
You,
Thank
whoever
you.
That was. I appreciate it. It was a really great thing because it was so different. So my art colleagues and friends and peers, some of them got it, you know. Mike Tuffery and people I know who love, you know, Shane, all those guys that love rugby and those people. But a lot of them didn't get it. So a lot of my rugby friends never got the fact that I was making a living on art and doing these things that they were looking at, whoa, you know, it's a bit strange. And then my art friends never understood why I was taking up a Saturday and a Thursday and a Tuesday night to train and play rugby. And why would you do that to yourself and your body and all that? And so it was such a release, you know, such a variation. And then surf life saving was something that I, you know, obsessed with the ocean and grew up in Titahi Bay. So, you know, you roll in circles that.
Are you going to get any surfing done back at the bay now?
Are you
too busy setting up your exhibition?
No, put on a, you know, the old wetsuit doesn't fit like it used to.
Go on, they stretch out.
Don't want to get splashed in water and rescued or something. You know?
Let us look at some of the pictures from the exhibition that you've put up on our webpage. I asked you if you had any skulls, but this is close to it. History tells me, and it's... how would you describe that?
So that work was about how we deliver art and down the bottom, the old apple on the top.
What's the old apple?
The apple's that William Tell kind of thing, which I explore.
Eaten.
Yes, it's eaten. So it's a little bit, you know, kids bring home the old dirty apple. The endeavor, which is there, which is our nod to old Captain Cook, and about the exactly what we spoke about, how we get taught history. And then all these kind of flag signifiers, those beautiful blue crayons, which were made actually in Auckland. They still make them. And then all these flags are kind of an idea of symbols. I've been obsessed with symbols. And the fingers, basically me sort of flipping the bird to the way that we teach. And sadly, we haven't really moved forward in art teaching, to be honest, in my opinion.
Art teaching or history teaching?
Both. Both.
Well, history might change.
Although that it sounds good.
Well, it's going to be really, it's interesting, right? I mean, it's going to become so much of history is contested. You know, are we going to have to run it past committees in order to get it through?
See, never thought of that, but it would make, see, it will. It'll have to have all sorts of involvement, inclusion, and all those sorts of things, won't it?
Don't
checking off, and who's the one to, and our history's so short.
Yeah,
our history's really short.
Yeah, it depends. You can pack a lot into it, though. I mean, it may be short, but the more you think about it, the more complicated it gets. You can spend a lot of time in the interstices.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in terms of the way that we'll teach when we go back, you know, we're going to go back to what date, and we're going to go, anyway.
Linked walking sticks.
Yeah. It's called Genius.
It is called Genius.
And it's a nod to my son, my oldest son, Cooper. He's on the autism scale or whatever you call it, spectrum, for long story. And
all are, I think.
The more, it's you and me.
I mean,
you and I are big time. You and I.
We're having eye contact. We're having a conversation.
Quite forced for me. You're good at it. But anyway.
You think I'm on the spectrum as well?
I think you are.
Do you?
I think you might be. I think most of us are.
Okay.
Other than the old get outside and run around. So one of the signifiers for Cooper when he was young is he was very, very dexterous and he could do the barrel of monkeys at one. And I thought he was a genius. And then, quote unquote, to medical fraternities, wasn't necessarily a genius. He was autistic. I still think he's a genius. So that's a nod to his ability to do the barrel of monkeys at age one, and it goes from the floor to the ceiling. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. And walking sticks because of the shape of them, or is there another
layer
linked
to
involved?
The shape, but it also had the young and the old. I was referencing him as a one-year-old.
Yeah.
But also people right up there. So, yeah.
And there's a painting of the sun.
Is it a painting? It's a collage I made and then photographed at large.
And it has an eyeball.
Yep.
And Maori carving.
Yep, mouth.
With the tongue.
Yep.
What are you saying?
And that's about, again, it kind of funny because the first two works, the second and third works are both about my son. But we had an argument once about the practicality. So autistic kids, in my thing, are really, really straight up, and he wanted to know how he could lengthen out the day. And I said to him, you can't lengthen out the day. You need to go to bed. We need to go to bed. And he turned around and looked at me and said, Maui.
I don't need to go to bed. I'll make the day longer.
Yeah, he said, Maui can do it, so I'll do it. And he was genuinely there.
Because Maui slowed down the sun.
That's him, man. So he said, I can do it. Yeah.
And so that's what you collaged about.
Yeah, I collaged
it. And has he seen it?
Yeah.
And does he realize that it's sparked by him?
Yeah, I'll tell him whether he'll make those links, but yeah, he will just enjoy it for whatever it is. You know, he takes those things. He was talking to me on a video the other day. There was a video of me that someone showed, my partner showed, Callie Putt showed him on online. And he started talking back to me because I was talking about him on the video. And then when he realized it wasn't me live talking to him, he was very upset and angry.
Really?
And just walked off.
Because you were a fake.
Yeah, didn't like seeing me live, doesn't like seeing me recorded. And he can't watch himself recorded, which is interesting. And neither can I.
Can you not? Well, neither can I.
See?
It's all adding up.
It's all adding up.
You've spoken about becoming a father being a watershed for you.
Yep.
And I think you went down to Christchurch around the same time.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which came first?
Went to Christchurch first.
And then had children.
Then had Cooper and then 2 years later had Arai, and then a 5-year gap, we had a little tohu. So I've got 3 boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you've got the fatherhood, the earthquakes. I mean, did your art practice change as a result of any of that in a radical way?
It just became a little bit more, even though I say it and I know people listening, it became a bit more mature and it came a little bit more thought out and a bit more purposeful to me. Now, so some people might think, no, but to me it did.
There was that's all that matters.
So that's what it did.
And when you say purposeful, you mean you followed a theme?
It was for that time. So the work I made for, anytime someone tries to get me to retell or redo it, I like to be in the now. It's like the Makan. Like, I don't feel all the work I've made at the Makan that will be on show next year, I don't feel that I can make that work away from home. Where some artists are capable of going to the residency, moving away, finishing the work. It just doesn't feel right. It feels a little bit labored for me to try and make Titirangi-based work or Makan-esque or feeling or whatever it might be in the arid North Canterbury.
You were telling me yesterday that the Colin Makan house in Titirangi is quite claustrophobic. I mean, when you're coming from the plains of Canterbury,
100%.
You're up the jungles around you.
100%.
So you're making that kind of art different? Will we be able to recognise the surroundings when we see it?
No, probably the total opposite in the sense that I wondered what I was yearning for, and I made a series of horizon paintings because I had no horizon. There's no reference point when you're in the studio. You're looking out into the bush and you're surrounded left, front, and especially the first 2 weeks I was there, it was raining. So when the sun comes through and the kereru and the tui and all that are there and they're doing their thing, that's different. When the sun comes through, a million different versions of green is exquisite. When you're there in the rain and the rain comes straight down like nothing I've ever seen, that's when it becomes quite heavy. And I think about them growing up in that environment.
You've, for this exhibition, you have recreated your studio or study, have you?
So that's a work owned by Christchurch Art Gallery. It's a big installation, which is called Alone Time. And it's essentially a mobile version of my studio at its most clean and most anal and most graphic.